Phil Murphy is the host of ESPN Sports.
I guarantee Center. You, Phil has played Super Mario Brothers.
I have no doubt
Maybe
about that.
A youth,
Phil, welcome.
I am 34 years of age, and my vote is Super Mario Brothers 3, just edging out the original. For the record, I support Adam.
There you go.
Righto, that's number 3. Okay,
why'd he sit there with this blank look on his face, like he's never played the game in his life?
Well, I don't think he has.
I played the kart one when I was a kid.
Mario Kart.
Mario Kart, different. Hey, Phil, we're not here to talk about Mario Brothers, even though we probably could for 45 or so minutes. We're here to talk about the world of sport and your take on it. What the opening round of, well, the NFL season was last week. We kicked off week two this week, obviously. What did you make of the opening round? Because there was a couple of interesting performances individually and also collectively.
Yeah, I mean, that's the storyline, and we are getting the second sample size of some of those, you know, in the coming days. I mean, Washington and the Giants, they kick off on ESPN in a matter of hours. And that's where we really start to see and start to answer questions like, are the Packers in trouble? Aaron Rodgers looked poor, not just average. He looked poor against the Saints, and the Packers got blown out unexpectedly. And if you look at the AFC across the board, the Chiefs had a very impressive comeback win against the Browns, as they're wont to do under Patrick Mahomes. But ESPN has its Football Power Index, its FPI, that ranks teams likeliest to reach the Super Bowl. Teams 2 through 6 in the FPI all lost. So now we're wondering, can anybody catch KC? Are the Bills' troubles going to be long-term? Will the Titans sort things out? Are the Ravens going to be able to rebound? So a lot of questions heading into week two, and I think that those fan bases in particular are very keen to see their teams again to see, is this a blip or is it a trend?
We saw, from an Australian perspective, lots of punters out there doing cool things. But this Jordan Mailata story, like, it's just signed a $100 million deal, Aussie $100 million deal with the Philadelphia Eagles. Is he, like, in terms of his position, I don't know it well enough, I must admit, is he sort of ranking up there in the top couple in that position that he plays?
Well, yes. I mean, he had a few starts last season due to injury, but this was the first game in which he was the starter week one. We have our choice of our five guys, and he's starting at left tackle. And it is very rare in the NFL for a quarterback to be left-handed. In fact, we went a good 5 years without a left-handed quarterback throwing a pass. So usually the left tackle lining up on the left side of the offensive line protects the quarterback's blind side. And on many teams, he is the second highest paid offensive player behind the quarterback. And you look, the top offensive tackles make $22, $23 million U.S. You can multiply that times 1.3 or 1.4 to figure out what that is in terms of Aussie dollars. But Jordan Mailata just signed a deal for 4 years, $64 million U.S. That's an average annual value of $16 million a year with a number of incentives on top of that. So he is in that top half to top third in terms of salary, and his performance, Pro Football Focus, ranks all the players on a 0 to 100 scale. They had Jordan in the top 10 at his position through week one. He only allowed 2 pressures, 0 sacks allowed, had a very solid performance against, albeit a subpar defense, but job done, well done in Philadelphia. And I think that'd be very encouraged from what they saw from Jordan, with a lot of pressure having him just sign that big contract days prior.
So, Phil, let's change pace to the NBA. I've been following this Ben Simmons saga really, really closely. Now, I read yesterday that Philadelphia now are not looking to trade him. Now, is that simply because there's not a trade partner out there, his trade value is disputed, or Philadelphia simply do want him back?
Well, I don't think those are mutually exclusive. I mean, his trade value has diminished as a result of him underperforming in that Hawks series, and questions persisting, have we figured out how to stop Ben Simmons at large? That is certainly going to hurt the market for him. Their general manager, Daryl Morey, is notorious for not being forced into a deal. He's willing to wait things out. Ben Simmons signed a very hefty contract, and he's in the early stages of it. So any team that takes Simmons on is going to incur a measure of high financial risk, in addition to having to give up a number of assets, Philly wanting a lot back in return. And I think deep down, Philadelphia looks at the body of work that Simmons has presented, and they're saying that this is a blip and not a trend, that his problems can be rectified, and if he continues to shoot and build confidence, that the team can adequately space the floor offensively with him on it. There's no concern whatsoever about him on the defensive side of the ball. He's one of the best defensive players at his position in the NBA. The question all comes down to, can you orchestrate an offense with him, with his skill set today? You know, had Philly won that Game 7 against Atlanta and then, you know, gotten hot, who knows? Yeah. But what we saw in that series against Atlanta, in particular that game seven at home, was somebody who shied away from the spotlight, and that is the big concern. He says he wants out. Philly would be keen to keep him if they can, and they're not going to give him up for a discount at the moment. But that they're going to get under the they're going to go under the pump in the final weeks. NBA tips off in about 4 or 5 weeks time, maybe 5 or 6 weeks time. So that is going to intensify as we get closer, and I don't think that story is going away.
So in your opinion right now, does he get traded?
In my opinion, I would say 60-40 he does not, and that has to do more with I don't think a team is going to step up and give the trade package that the Sixers want. If there were to be a team to do it, it would be some collection of draft picks and young assets, and I just don't see a contender taking on that risk right now. If he were to move, it would be a team like the Kings that has some young, interesting backcourt pieces that can space the floor and allow Simmons to be almost like a point forward in that offense, not be asked to generate offense, but kick to Tyrese Halliburton and De'Aaron Fox and some of the young talent that they have on the perimeter. It's a tall order. That's why I'd say more likely than not he does not get traded, but I'm no more confident than 60-40 because I've been reading the same things you have, and it seems like they're at a bit of an impasse with the clock ticking.
I've got to ask you before we let you go, Phil, about this NASCAR season situation where are they going to make a track inside the Coliseum in Los Angeles? What is it that they're actually going to do? Because I'm finding it hard to picture.
So they're going to open the 2022 season at the LA Coliseum. And if you look at mock-ups of it, it looks like, you know, they're going around inside the Coliseum. It's the Daytona International Speedway is the traditional season opening race, but it is shifting to Los Angeles next year. It's going to be held February 6th, 1 week before the Super Bowl, 2 weeks before the Daytona 500, which is normally the big event, and it will be inside the stadium on a temporary quarter-mile asphalt track. So it will be a significantly shorter track than normal, which is how it will fit inside the Coliseum. What that means for cars and speed around the track, your guess is as good as mine, but that's why it's intriguing, and that's why NASCAR, which is typically, you know, doesn't resonate outside of American soil, it's making international waves. The story of this race moving for one season to open the 2022 season in LA.
Amazing.
That sounds good. I've got a great visual of what that could look like. How many would that hold? 100,000 or 80,000?
LA Coliseum, yes, it can hold six figures. I mean, it's basically, I would say it's about the size of the MCG. I mean, MCG can go just over $100,000, and I think Coliseum, the capacity is about the same.
But Phil, that's nothing compared to some of the other NASCAR tracks. They get 150,000 to some tracks, don't they?
They do, but those are larger tracks. And this is, NASCAR had done this a few times before, and they're having these kind of, for lack of a better term, throwback races. I remember, 1956, NASCAR held an event in Soldier Field in Chicago, which is smaller than the Coliseum. Right. But again, stock cars looked a lot different back then. So it's going to look very different from a typical track. Tracks are typically longer, far longer than a quarter mile. And it is something that they're doing as a one-off. It's not going to be the wave of the future. It's kind of this, you know, the same TV broadcast network that has the rights to NASCAR in the U.S. has the rights to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl will be just down the street in a week's time, and I think it's part marketing ploy, part sports gimmick, and I mean it's getting eyeballs and making waves. So right now it's job done, and we'll see come February how well they execute.
Well, you've got time to polish up on your Super Mario 3 before you get to that point, Phil. We appreciate your time as always. Have a great weekend in the world of sport.
Brilliant, boys. Have a good one.
Good man. Phil Murphy, host of ESPN Sports Center.
All you need to do in Super Mario 3 is find where the whistles are. And then it takes you to a faraway land.
You've been blown on too many whistles, mate.